Welcome to Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My name is Bill DeYoung. I'm here today with author George Fleming, who is it George L. Fleming? Do we put the L in there?
I have to have the L.
Okay, George L. Fleming.
Yes.
Who's just published his fourth novel. This is the fourth in the series called Tampa Bay Tropics. It's a thriller, and if you followed the series, it follows Jake Dupree and his lovely and talented wife, Rita O'Hara, who live in Tampa and live quite the lifestyle, but are also extremely talented operatives, if you will. It's great stuff. And George L. is sitting here with me, published by St. Petersburg Press, which we shall always say is a division of the St. Petersburg Group, which also owns the St. Pete Catalyst. Here, the book is called Bonair Blonde. Explain to us, first of all, I know it, but tell the folks at home what that title refers to.
Well, the title refers to one of the storylines. This is really two novels in one. Uh-huh. And the first novel is set in present day Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And it's all about how Rita O'Hara and Jake Dupree, go about trying to find the murderer who killed an employee of theirs, a performer at their Namaste nightclub. And it involves a lot of biker gangs. My favorite is the biker gang, the Batacubas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an all-female biker gang.
The all-chick biker gang.
That's
the Batacubas.
That's right.
Yeah.
But then the second storyline is an origin story of how Reed and Jake got together.
Yeah.
And they meet on Bonaire Island down in the Southern Caribbean. And at one point, someone, a bartender, refers to Reed as being a hot Bonaire blonde.
Hmm.
And boom, there was the title, and there's the story.
Yeah, I thought the origin story was great because it really took me back to, it explained a lot of things. In the last book, which was Nevermore,
yes,
explained a lot about Reed, and we learned a lot more about Jake this time, which I thought was interesting.
Well, that was my intention.
Yeah?
Because I felt like that Reed had gotten a lot of attention, and she deserves it.
Yeah.
But I felt like Jake really was this kind of undeveloped character, and he's one of the two protagonists. So I thought that in Bonaire Blonde, I'd give him a lot more ink.
I wanted to ask you, George, how the characters evolved. You know, for someone maybe who hasn't been following this great adventure from 6 years ago, I think it was Bad Habits, the first book.
That's
okay.
Right.
In your mind, maybe not so much the way you've written them, but the way they have evolved as people, as characters, over the course of these four novels. They seem to me that they were a little less perfect this time and a little more aware of, you know, their own inconsistencies and flaws and stuff, but making things work in a good way. For you, how have they changed? Because I know they're probably very real people to you.
They are very real people. And I agree that in Bad Habits, the first novel in the series, they're kind of flat characters, kind of like action heroes almost.
And I would agree with that. It's been a while since I read that one, but yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I wanted to make them attractive, intelligent, sexy, terribly in love. You know, they're married and they're terribly in love with each other, but they're also very capable individuals in a variety of ways. But by the time I got to Bonaire Blonde, I decided I want to put some more flesh and blood in these characters.
I was going to say more meat on the bones, but I think you beat me to it.
And less action heroes is more just human beings who are trying to make it in this world, and they're trying to help people, and they have their flaws. And I would say one of the flaws that Reed O'Hara has, and I know this is sacrilegious for me to say about my hero, is that she's a control freak. She has to be in control.
Yeah.
So with this case of finding the murderer of with that case, she has automatically assumed she'd take over. Well, this time Jake said no.
This is what I'm talking about. They're flaws. I mean, they come up against each other, albeit briefly. you know, things, well, the folks, things probably work out. We'll just put it that way. But yeah, that's exactly. So you were saying that now in within the course of their evolution in your writing, I can make them slightly less perfect.
And I think that makes for a better story. I mean, because otherwise there's no rub here between these two main characters. And there has to be some kind of conflict mm-hmm. with them and between them. And I really just, you know, I didn't want to make them just these perfect characters. And that, and Jake is struggling with his past. He's a former assassin
yeah.
for the CIA. He's going through incredible PTSD. He's having a hard time living among what he calls the normals in Tampa Bay. And
the rest of us.
Yes, exactly.
The great unwashed.
Exactly. Right? And, you know, that's also, and that goes back to the origin story that's in Bon Air Blonde, because that's where they meet in Bon Air, and that's where they feel each other out and get to know each other. And, yeah, they fall in love, of course, and have great sex.
Every time I talk to you, I always bring that up because, hey, man, it was, you know, it's part of the series. That's what happens, you know.
So
these two beautiful people,
exactly. and so, really, I'm trying to pull this up here. So I got a review last night. It's called a flirtatious tropical thriller with unconventional style.
Okay,
but. The reviewer gave me only 3 out of 5 stars.
And you want to tell us why or,
well,
you know,
sure. Because, let's just say she wrote, although I did feel like nearly every page had some sort of dirty comment, which felt gratuitous at that level of frequency. Some characters are written in a way that comes off as borderline offensively stereotyped. And then she concludes, if you enjoy outrageously over-sexualized old spy movies that are filled with cheesy one-liners...
And who doesn't?
You will love Bon Air Blonde.
What an endorsement.
That's exactly what I said. I said, thank you, because that's my target audience.
Well, I mean, I wrote this down. I wasn't even sure I was going to say it, but with regard to the dialogue, I mean, it's pretty much constant. It's a string of puns, pop culture and literary references and sexual innuendo. You throw all that in a blender and that's the way they talk to each other. That's the way Ravel talks. They all, you know, even the baddies get involved in it sometimes.
Sure, sure.
But it's the nature of these books. And what I always say about fiction is that if you can find yourself in the world, if you can immerse yourself in the world, then you take what they give you, and it makes sense in that context. And it is, as we were saying before we got on here, I think more balanced in a way and much more human. You were a journalist.
I was.
Where were you a journalist?
For a number of years with the former St. Petersburg Times.
Yeah, really?
The Tampa Bay Times.
So what was your beat? What did you do?
I wrote feature pieces.
Wow.
I was one of the first journalists to... And this was a long time ago, to come across the number of women who had tattoos. And so I wrote that piece. I'm really proud of that piece because I saw a trend and I went out and did some research. And I spoke with, I interviewed a professor of pop culture who explained to me the significance of tattoos themselves and how they've evolved into an opportunity for women to express themselves almost in a kind of defiant way. What is important about my journalism, and I've been a published writer since I was 16, all of it nonfiction, right? And I had reached the point where I was getting really tired of being controlled by the editors and having my stuff changed and, you can't put that in or that's okay, but... And such, and it got kind of frustrating.
You know, I'm an editor too, George. So you know, you're
well.
It's a frequent tune, yeah. Right. And I had editors for years,
In fact, at the Times, I continually failed the Cheerios test.
Hmm.
Remember that one?
What is it? You can read it over breakfast without throwing up in your bowl or something. Yeah, right.
Exactly. And you know,
failed the Cheerios test.
I failed that test. So it was at that point when I said, man, I want to just write fiction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I want to write a novel. I want to be completely untethered, unleashed, and it's worked out pretty well.
Well, you're an educator as well.
What's your
sort of teaching arc? What was that all about?
It was, I started in grad school, and so I taught at Purdue University, mm-hmm. Where I got my master's degree in English. Mm-hmm. And then I taught at Florida State, and then I taught at Hillsborough College.
Well, you told me once, one of our early interviews, that you had always been like a closet thriller reader.
I tried to
think of a more clever way to say that, but I couldn't. But that in academia, people thought, that's just, that's pulp fiction.
I had to hide those books.
It's
John Le Carré.
Yeah.
I had to hide The Spy Who Came in from the Cold so that my colleagues wouldn't cast dispersions on me. But, that's all about, what this is all about? This is all about, are you familiar with Foucault?
No.
The philosopher?
No.
His
Maybe I should
One
be.
Of his major thrusts was that knowledge is power. Now you go, okay, that sounds kind of corny. But what he said was that it's in, particularly in academia, they control knowledge. And then they dish it out to us in little golden crumbs so that they then exert control over us as to what is literature and what is not literature.
Hmm.
And so I feel like I have broken away from that. I feel like in my novels, I don't know if they're literature or not, but I blend high culture with low culture.
Mm-hmm.
I have characters saying, making very eloquent comments, and then they're just bawdy and inappropriate and obscene.
Yep.
So that's what I try.
Delightfully
to do.
So.
Right.
Say that.
So is that literature? I don't know.
Well, it's the whole question is, what is art? I mean, it's like,
what
is it to you? What is it to me? It's not the same thing, probably. You know, does it move you in some way? It's art. You know,
right.
Who's to say that's not literature? Tell me where these characters came from, though, Reed and Jake. I mean, were they sort of in your subconscious for years? Like, one day we're coming out to talk.
If you look at the on the front cover of all of my novels,
mm-hmm.
There's a particular woman that's on the front cover.
I know this story too.
And that's,
keep going.
And that woman is Linda Fleming, mm-hmm. who is my wife of 46 years.
Linda L. Fleming?
Linda L. Very good.
Does she have an L, too?
She does.
Just like you. I made that up. Okay.
And so I wanted to write a novel based on her as the protagonist because, of course, I love that woman, but she's also just incredible. She's a genius. She's a successful attorney. And she's a wonderful person to have around. And I thought, I'm going to turn Linda into an action hero. But then I said, I can't have her just be by herself. So
46
I said,
years, man. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I said, well, okay. She's got to have a partner.
Yeah, she couldn't just be sort of Wonder Woman out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I suppose she could have been, but yeah.
So then I just looked in the mirror and said, Well, hello, Jake Dupree.
Wait, dude. I'm sorry. I don't see it. Because Jake is buff and, he's brilliant and extremely talented. And so essentially you took versions of the two of you. Is this the way you and Linda talk to each other? Do you
all
spar back and forth like this?
All the time. All the time. It's a lot of fun. In fact, she'll make a remark and I say, can I have that? And she'll say, sure. No, put it right into
Seriously?
The novel. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So she is, what kind of a critic is she of your work? Is she kind of, Reed wouldn't say that, George.
Well, it's not so much that as the content. She with Nevermore, she challenged me to write a novel that would not be at all blue. Mm-hmm. And so I took it on and I did. And if you read Nevermore, I think it's a good story, but it's, A lot of the sex and the action is off camera,
mm-hmm.
And there's very there's not any strong language or anything like that. And so I said, all right, Linda, I'll do that. So I wrote Nevermore. I was happy with it, but I said never again, never again, because
is that for you or for the characters though?
What do you mean?
Did it not feel true to the characters? you know, to have it sort of be, you know, in the other room, because this is very in your face, the sexuality particularly in this story.
Well, you take my secondary character, and I hate even calling her secondary, is Revelle Robespierre.
Yep.
My little Swiss miss, who is just a computer hacker nonpareil, mm-hmm. and terribly in love with Reed, and is a cohort to both Reed and Jake.
Yeah.
And with her, it was odd for her not to be swearing, you know?
She's got a mouth on her, man.
She does, doesn't she?
Yeah.
But Linda / Reed does not speak like that.
Yeah.
You know, unless they are really upset. And then they will drop a F-bomb.
Yeah.
Either in real life or in my novels. But so the Nevermore, yeah, it was kind of a cleansing experience for me. But then I said, "Nah, I'm going to, with Bonheur Blonde, I'm going to just go crazy."
I need to ask where Namaste came from and where the whole notion of, you know, the color. And I was honestly, none of this really takes place in the club. I was a little past it. I mean, I'm not, there's no criticism here. It was like, I thought this was interesting. That first of all, the origin story, but that this was basically, you know, the biker gangs and the Irish guy whose name I can't remember.
Oh, Denizen, yeah. Rainey.
Good old, yes. Den, yeah. And the whole idea of the club, tell me where that came from. Reed and Jake, folks, if you don't know this, they operate a sort of a very trendy nightclub, a high-end nightclub, we call it, that features like semi-nude dancers and stuff.
All very tasteful.
Very, yeah, yeah. He made a face when he said that, you know, like he raised his eyebrows.
Hey, no pasties.
Okay, why? Where did that come from, the club?
That came from...
been hanging out in Dale Mabry, have you?
Well, yeah, man. I made my trips to those you know, it was like deja vu all over again.
There you go.
But it was a reaction to the fact that Tampa Bay is something of an epicenter of strip clubs.
Yeah.
Right? And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have them create this Namaste nightclub where these former strippers who are just, you know, destroyed with drugs and alcohol abuse and being physically abused by people, give them opportunity to have a rebirth. So that, and in fact, at Namaste, it's up to the performer if she wants to disrobe.
Right. I remember.
Right. And there's no full disrobing. But it's up to the performer.
Yeah.
And there are performers at Namaste who do not disrobe at all. Uh-huh. Right. And so it really was and the idea came to me of Reed and Jake providing an opportunity for women to rehabilitate themselves.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of serious rules that they have to live, yes, by. One of them is that they are not allowed to associate with any criminal enterprises. Well, poor Alicia, unfortunately, got herself with the Barracuda's motorcycle club.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very, very bad people.
Bad hombres, yeah. The idea really that Namaste is also not cover, but that's what Reed and Jake kind of do in real life. Does Reed have a law practice as well?
She does.
In addition to this?
She does. She has a sole practice.
Yeah.
She started out with a law firm that she'll go unnamed, and then branched out she developed her own practice, and she had one class action lawsuit that yielded about $300 million for her. So that gave her the means to be able to have her own law practice, to have Namaste.
It all started in Bon Air. Yeah, yeah. He's nodding. I want to close with this, though. the idea that these people, was this important to you in the beginning that these people lived in Tampa? And it was this kind of like, A, it's what you're familiar with, and B, Nobody else has done this before. Why are Jake Dupree and Rita Hara in Tampa? Why is not
that's a great question. And it's because I grew up here, mm-hmm. and I love Tampa Bay. I love everything about Tampa Bay.
You grew up in Clearwater, yeah?
I grew up in Clearwater, right on the north end of Clearwater Beach. And I love this place. And it's my home, and it will forever be my home. And I thought, why not showcase all of the wonderful aspects of Tampa Bay? So that's why I have folks having lunch at the Columbia Restaurant, or visiting the Don Cesar, mm-hmm. right? Or going to the Dalí Museum and such. And it's not like I'm trying to be like trying to be a member of the Tourist Bureau here. But what I'm also trying to do is that evil can be present in the greatest of sunshine. So that Tampa Bay for me is as wonderful a place for good people as it is for shady people. And that don't think that just because this is a paradise, that there isn't going to be trouble. And that's what I wanted to do.
Bonheur Blonde is the new novel by George L. Fleming of Tampa, Florida. It is the fourth book in the Tampa Bay Tropics thriller series. Why was there 3 years between the last one and this one? That seemed a little long. I remember you told me originally you wanted to do 20 books in 20 years.
And I still may. Yeah. But
turn them out, buddy.
Well, okay. I think that the reason why it took longer was because I took my time. I really wanted to make this special, and I think I accomplished it, and I think it turned out well, and I think a lot of it was because I took my time and really poured myself into it, doing lots of research and rewriting. Okay.
Well, I should say that if you're new to this and intrigued by all this, and I hope you are, this is a good place to start, Bonheur Blonde, because it will introduce you to Reed and Jay, how they got together, and in a way, why they are the way they are. It's fascinating stuff. It is available through St. Petersburg Press. I imagine it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon.
Certainly at stpetersburgpress.com, and I believe you can order it through Tombolo and other great booksellers. And do you have a website, George?
Not yet, but it's in the works.
Okay. How's that? There you go. readandjake.com. Anyway, George L. Fleming, it's such a pleasure to speak
Same
to you
here,
today.
Bill. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you again. And we're going to wish you all the best with this one, and we'll wait for the movie, too.
Fantastic. Love it.
And we'll talk when you do the next one.